It's a sci-fi Moby Dick meets Das Boot in space.
Well, yeah, it's inspired. I mean, I think the Melville novel is the true American classic. A lot of people haven't read it because it's the whale chapters are pretty intense. I was trying to find a book that wasn't one of those crappy books at the airport. You know, everything's like someone's biography. There was no classics. And my husband said, "Why don't you read this?" And so I started reading it on the plane. And I'm like, man, this is amazing. You know, the themes are amazing. And I said to him, well, you can't make Moby Dick. It's been made. John Huston made it. But we kind of had a brainwave, and we said, why don't we take it to space? But it's very much inspired by rather than a traditional adaptation. There's the themes I think are very... The man is a monster. The revenge themes are against an animal that doesn't even understand. We're doing that right now to the world, killing something for, and going on this mad mission and taking everyone to their certain death. I mean, I think the world's becoming like that, you know. So, you know, it ain't Star Trek, put it that way, you know.
Will it be?
But I'm also making a short for the Olympics, which has sci-fi elements as well.
Well, let's get to that in a second. Is it an alien that...
I'm designing an alien. So several aliens, but they're different breeds.
Are you getting a sizable budget for this?
I'm developing it through the BBC, and lots of people are interested to do it. So I don't know yet, we'll see, but a lot of actors want to do it too, and you know, I've made a lot of films low budget. I know how you make low budget. Kevin was shot in 30 days, so I think it's a bit will to power. You know, if I want to make this, I'll find a way to make it. So this crazy world, there's not a lot of money, and you know, we find a way, you know.
Well, the reason why I ask is because effects is a completely different thing where there
it'll be in camera effects only.
Wow.
Yeah. I did a lot of work on opticals when I was at film school, so you know, the old optical style.
Because you trained as a DP.
I'm a photographer as well, yeah. But photography and DPing are very different. Photography is more like directing. It's more you choose your subject and you study your subject. So the first week of film school, I knew I was on the wrong course because I applied to the film school only with stills, and I think I was the first person to go to film school with stills, with just stills. They liked my stills, and the DP I worked with then, he loved my stills as well. He said to me right away, even the head of film school says, you sound like a director. And then I tried to leave, but they didn't want me to leave, and then I wanted to move to documentary, and you know, somebody else moved to, you know, they gave it to an editor. So I kind of ended up staying kind of by default, you know, and directed my graduation film, yeah, and short film as well, yeah, so.
And this short film that you're working on for the Olympics, did Danny Boyle get you involved, or?
Oh, no, that was the BBC. They asked me. I have a good relationship with Christine Lang in there. They did Kevin. She's wonderful, and the Film Council have been wonderful to me, and so, and it's a collaboration with Film 4 and the BBC, and they wanted some art, you know, to pick some directors and artists who would, you know, contribute. Yeah.
What's the short going to be about?
It's about a swimmer who's like this alien cipher who basically swims through the whole of Britain, comes from the sea, swims through Britain, it's completely surrealist, and we see scenes from the bank, his total point of view, and so we just see this guy day and night. And a painful journey. It's quite a spiritual film, actually. After Kevin, I needed some palate cleanser. Yeah. After a total Rubik's Cube puzzle, I'm now doing 6-minute long tracking shots, you know?
Is the entire film
tracking
the
shot?
The full thing is that 6 minutes, so...
No, every shot in the film's a tracking shot. They'll last quite a long time, but there's one shot in particular, which is the boy, because it's cold water swimming. We did it in November. It's nearly, I think it was 6 degrees.
In the Thames?
No, it was in all the rivers down near Devon,
oh, okay.
Which is south. But that's kind of swimming. It's a really particular swimming. You have to train in a different way. He's an Olympic swimmer, but you have to assimilate and get your body right. And it's really tough. It's pain. It's total pain. You're going through this freezing water. Your head starts to buzz. You start to hallucinate, you know. So the poor kid, man, I hope he's okay. He was getting really white by the end, sorry. But I think I discovered an amazing actor as well as a swimmer, because if you're an athlete, you're really focused. And he's been training for 6 hours every day, and someone tells him he lifts his arm a little bit higher. I mean, imagine directing a kid like that. I said, do this, do that. He does exactly what I ask. It's amazing. I'm going to work with some athletes from the as well as actors, you know.
Well, you've worked with a lot of non-professional actors before, though, in your shorts as well.
Yeah. I like to mix up a bit. Keeps the actors on their toes, and also it's really interesting because you have a new freshness. Tilda Swinton's not like an actor. I mean, Samantha Morton's not... I wouldn't say they even consider themselves actresses. Samantha Morton just went into Morven Callan, and she was Morven Callan for the whole movie. I just followed her with, like, shooting mags and mags, you know, 10-minute reels, and she was just in character. And Tilda's just... brings it on, man. She just, she's no bullshit. She comes, she's aristocracy, Scottish aristocracy. She comes from a military background, and I think that helps. She's just like, get the shit done, yeah. And she, and I love her.
The last thing on the Olympic short, is that going to be played at the opening ceremony?
I don't really know yet. I think they're just going to screen them, and they're going to be shown at the ceremonies. But there's, it's a little bit grey at the moment, because I think some people are still, you know, still making them. They don't need to be delivered until March. But I started shooting it, and then I thought I could make this a feature. You know, it was crazy. It was a
nice. Would it be the seed for a feature?
Yeah, I might use it. It gave me lots of ideas, and I worked with a wonderful DOP who's 5'2". She's a diver. We did the biggest crane shot. We had all the big toys, and me and her, like, they were tiny, and she's really fearless, and I really want to work with her again. Same as Seamus, and same as Alvin, and same as Tom Townend, who shot the opening scene, the Tomatina.
Yes.
That's another DOP. I think Seamus wanted to kill him because he wanted to shoot that, you know.
Why didn't he?
Because he was in a different film, you know. He was already booked. I was asked by the producers, recreate it here, and I said no way. I mean, it would cost millions of dollars. I mean, it's 40,000 people in a tiny little street covered with tomatoes. I mean, that, and it happens for a few hours. We had no time to shoot it.
15 minutes, right?
It was crazy. But basically I picked a sweet spot. I went really early, and I said to Tilda, keep the day free. We went, we picked a sweet spot, and then a Bollywood film who also tried to recreate it. There's no way you can recreate it, but they had a lot of money. They saw that I had the good spot, you know, and they went higher, tried to get my spot, and I was like, no way, you know. But thank God for Tilda Swinton. She went into this mass of drunken boys and girls and smacked in the face several times. I was pulling bodies out. It felt dangerous but sexy. And I mean, the first thing that happened to me is someone put a bucket of tomatoes over me, and the camera got jammed, and I told Tilda to stay back. And we had to wait for it to calm down a little bit. But then they clean it really quickly. They come with big hoses. So you've only got a little window. But it gets pretty crazy, you know. I mean, these guys have been standing drinking since 7 o'clock in the morning. And what they do at the beginning to start the ceremony is they've got a big pole with a ham, serrano or something. And it's covered with grease, like lard or something. And the person that gets the ham, and they'll try to climb over each other. It's very sexual. And then they get the ham, and then they fire a big gun, and then everyone goes crazy. Like, it's totally mental, you know. So my husband showed me some pictures online. That's what gave me the idea, because I said, don't you're always on the blinking internet, get off that computer, you're too plugged in. And they went, see this, and I went, okay, that's cool, you know. So
but you talked about the personal toll that doing this film took emotionally.
My dad was dying, and someone got a hold of a leaked out copy of the script and really liked it. This company that did Twilight Summit. They're a serious company, and I got a phone call the day my dad died from the BBC saying, you know, you've been offered £12 million to do this. They seem serious. You don't even need a big actress. And she was really happy, and I said, oh, Mama, my dad's just died, you know. And so I was distracted. They danced around it for a year, and it was an early draft, and I wanted to make it really, you know, intricate. And so the recession happened just before I came to New York to cast. So I met Ezra when he was 15, and then the whole thing fell through, and I was really angry with them, because I knew I could have went to the Film Council in the first place, and that's what I'd said to the producers in the first place, is like, go to the Film Council, let's do it independent, you know. And I've got a lot, it was a lovely guy, Lenny Crooks. He kept some money for me, like a million, you know. He's a good guy, and he supported me as a filmmaker. And so it's such a shame about the Film Council, but hopefully the BFI, hopefully it's going to be okay. I just hope the new filmmakers get a chance, because I've been lucky. I got some, you know, funding from the government, you know. And you don't have that here. I don't know how you guys make movies then. I mean, especially if you don't have a lot of money. I'm a blue-collar Glasgow girl, you know. You need to have rich parents or a sponsor. Or people think because it's a digital world that you shoot a film for nothing. But you meet all these young filmmakers doing amazing work, and they're working in a bar, or they're cleaners, or, you know. And,
well, it's similar to that scene in Quills where the marquee gets put in with nothing, and he cuts himself so that he can write with his blood.
Exactly.
You have to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm quite fascinated with the marquee's side. But also his book, you know, fucking crazy, man. You know.
Would you ever make a film about Marquis de Sade?
I'd like to make a film about Oppenheimer, actually. But I don't like biopics very much. I've been asked to do quite a few. But I was reading the American Prometheus was a book I bought for the plane, and I left it on the plane, and I'm really annoyed I left it on the plane, because it's about Oppenheimer, and he's a beautiful man and a vision, and how that vision becomes skewed, and the McCarthyism and all that sort of stuff.
Wait, what biopics have you turned down?
I was asked to do something Blondie, which I love Blondie, I absolutely love Blondie, and then this Patti Smith's done a wonderful novel, and that's about Robert Mapplethorpe and that friendship. I love that because of a photographer. I saw like his work very early on, and it's very provocative, and some of it I don't know if I like it, but it certainly gets something. And that was another one that I thought about, but I mean, the one I think works the best I've seen is Control, you know, and Samantha's wonderful in that. I mean, man, she's amazing, and the guy in it is amazing. But that's a different, it's not a biopic really, it's just you're kind of in his head. But sometimes, you know, those kind of lazy biopic here tells you something, and it's boring, and like, or it presses all the buttons, but it doesn't really tell the story of the person from a very subjective point of view. But someone like Oppenheimer, I think, is really interesting. I'd love to do that.
Yeah. Have you approached other people about it?
No, I just got you. You're the first person I told.
Oh, yeah.
Another one I love, American novel I love, is What Makes Sammy Run. That is Superman. That's been in development for years.
Well, it's been turnaround, I'm sure.
I mean, every filmmaker.
Yeah.
The same with Seconds, the wonderful film. There's been several people trying to remake it, but these things get shelved, and they cost so much money in the development that no one can make them anymore, which is completely weird and obscene, you know, because it's cost $2-5 million to develop it. You need to pick up that cost. You know?
Yeah. Have you talked to Patti Smith about doing hers?
I'd like to meet her, but, you know, the thing is that she's writing the script, totally respectful of that, and I think she wants to be protective of it, and I would be too.
Were you approached about Mapplethorpe, and you were approached about Patti Smith as well?
Well, the book had came out, and a lovely producer sent it to me, and I did think about it, but I thought that Patti should do it. I mean, I don't want to meet people feel I'm going to do it, but I studied photography. I mean, these were things I knew about, and I'm really fascinated by photographers, and also the relationship they have. He's a gay man, and she's, you know, and she loves her, you know? Mm. And so it's a beautiful story, but I think it's best she does it herself. She should direct it. Yeah.
As I was watching Kevin, I couldn't stop thinking about Jeff Hall, the neo-Nazi. His son, who shot him, the cops who looked at it said, well, before his father turned into a neo-Nazi, he had been kicked out of several schools. He had tried to choke out a teacher with a phone cord.
Yeah, yeah.
He would have done something like this over time.
Anyway,
it was just that
it was just
lit the match.
Bomb.
And in this, and I think it's less accusatory than the novel is.
Definitely.
It seems like the nature of evil is that it is. There are moments, several times in the dialogue, where they talk about, you know, why. Well, there is no reason when, you know, the computer virus, it just is. Things
well,
are.
Well, I just read another biography of Mao, you know, and he was a psychopath, and people loved him, Telltale, and I don't want to insult any of the Chinese people, but there's a lot of people, there's billions of people killed, you know. And you realise this guy who had a really nice mum and dad and nice family. I mean, sometimes there's not a reason, you know. I mean, people want to find easy answers, like who's to blame, the empire of evil. Evil begets evil.
Well, just like people will see King Kong and they have a million different meanings of what it's actually about.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Robert Shea.
It's a brilliant film, actually, the original name.
Yeah, 33. Yeah, we won't talk about, I know the troubles that you've had with Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson's a great filmmaker. I've got nothing against Peter Jackson.
Did you like that new King Kong?
Not as much as the original.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
I get a bit sick of all this CGI and all these motion capture, all that money spent. It feels a bit gross. I get a bit bored with them.
Yeah.
You know?
But people have a million different explanations for what it's about, and Bob Shea was talking about Lord of the Rings, and he said that somebody came up very earnestly and said it's all about the power of nuclear weapons and justified it the entire way.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
And
wow, that's cool. All right, that's mental. Someone came to me in Ratcatcher and said that that's from about Jesus Christ. We made a film about Jesus Christ. It's all the kids Jesus, and I'm like, dude, really? I don't know. I wasn't really conscious of that at the time.
Well, with Kevin, what would you say that it's ultimately about, if not about the parental relationship, but on a bigger scale?
Well, a bigger scale, it's about the unexplainable, that sometimes evil comes from some, you know, somewhere unexplained. I think that there's a need for love there, and she's not a natural mother. I'm not saying that she's to blame because of that, but it's a pretty taboo subject when you know the way Tilda even held the child, you know, it's at arm's length. And the first 3 months are really important. A kid picks up and all that stuff. If you don't teach a kid language, they can never ever, feral kids can never learn to speak. Honestly, I saw a documentary, man, they found some feral kids, they're trying to re-speak. But if you don't learn speech at a very early age, you can never learn it. You know, so those formative years are really a big deal, you know. And I think she's pretty resentful as a mother, but I think he's also got an emotional quotient missing. And they're at a kind of war, you know. I guess it's a kind of domestic horror film. But no, I wasn't trying to make a high school killing movie. I was trying to make a mother-son. I suppose it was Oedipus or something. It was like modern Greek tragedy, you know. That's where the political thing might come in, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, but I was actually wondering...
Elephant does a good job of making a film about that already, you know. And the film before that, Elephant, was Alan Clark, which was a short film about violence. You should watch it. It's just, the whole film is tracking shots. One guy shoots another guy, then he shoots another guy, and then he shoots another guy, and mindless violence on and on and on and on till you become fucking anaesthetized. And it's a terrific movie. I mean, you get bored. I mean, it's crazy. You're watching this thing, it becomes mesmeric, just of people shooting each other. And then you see these things. I mean, I saw this thing online. I mean, these kids who play these shoot 'em up games and they go to war. I saw something that was so upsetting me. Two boys, soldiers, you know, seemed like nice kids, and now they have these targets they can do in Iraq from, like, you know, a mile away.
Drones, yeah.
I think they saw a guy with a bag who was actually a journalist, and they just shot them, and you see the footage from the ground. It's really disturbing. And these guys were like, yeah, go, yay, yeah, it's a video game. That's mindless violence of everyone. Then you saw the footage of the ground, all the people burning. They didn't even know or relate to that those people in a human way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty sociopathic or psychopathic, if you ask me.
You know? When you heard about Columbine, did you think about the mother before you had read this book?
Well, I thought about the mothers of Hitler and Mao and people like that, you know, and...
I mean, before you got the novel, yeah.
Before that, and obviously there was a big massacre in the Scotland too, called Dunblane. One guy, he gets a gun and starts shooting everybody. It was just rage. There's a lot of rage in the world. They're little time bombs, you know. So,
what does it say that the only person that actually asks her how she's doing is one of the victims in the film?
Well, I don't even think that scene's in the book. Me and my husband made that up, you know. I mean, I think there was something similar. You know, and Lion was really cool. I mean, she let me took a lot of liberties and stuff, and she never saw the script at all until the end. But yeah, I suppose it was like, it was something very powerful about kindness from the person that was inflicted, because he didn't blame her. He didn't say, because of Kevin, you're Kevin. He saw beyond that, you know? And I thought that was very moving, yeah.
Well, because it's a monster movie.
Yes.
And very much like...
Yeah. Wait till you see my modern Frankenstein, that's coming up.
Are you? Mm-hmm. Are you working on a...
It's not old-fashioned, it's modern. But that's separate, it's a different idea, it's just, again, inspired.
Is that going to come after the sci-fi film?
It's something boiling, but it's not anything like what you'd imagine Frankenstein to be. It's modern day, and I can't say too much quite yet.
Well, very much like Frankenstein is a monster movie in two parts, in that it's about a monster, but it's also about the monster of society coming after him, and you have children cornering her in her house, and you also, the reason why I was asking about the victim being the only one to ask her how she's doing is because there's so often people act on behalf of victims and are outraged on behalf of victims.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good point. People find something they blame, and, you know, and they take up a cause, you know, and actually if you look
at... they have no connection
to. And I read something very recently about, I don't remember the names, but it was a man, his daughter or his son had been murdered, and all these people took a cause, and the murderer was going to be executed quite rightly because it was quite horrific. And he started to change his mind about capital punishment, the dad. And I thought, oh my God, and he started campaigning the other way. And I'm like, that's...
Where was this case?
I think it was the US. It was the US, yeah. But I read it in the newspaper, but I'm so spaced out right now. I'm like, I don't know where I am, what hotel room I am, because I've been in so many hotels for the last 6 weeks, you know, so, you know.
You talk about this press trip. As you're making the film, do you store away things to talk about during a press tour?
Never. I hate talking about films I've made. I want people to see them. That's why I'm a filmmaker. I think there's too much talking about making, you know, this... Because it's the internet now, it's like everyone wants a little angle. No offence, because you're a great interview. But it's like a... you know, you talk about the same thing over and over again. It's not creative for me anymore. You know, I want to make another movie.
Do you do commentary tracks on your DVDs? I know Larry Clark doesn't.
I've done it once and I really hated it, and I'm not going to do it the way.
Especially for a film like Kevin, where...
No, why should I? Why am I going to explain things? What I will do is I'll talk about some processes, and I will show some paintings that I did very early of Kevin inside. I did little computer drawings about angry Kevin and mums with babies and the way she held them. So I can show some things to inspire filmmakers and new filmmakers, but I'm not going to do commentary, no.
Mm-hmm. We'll finish up with the advice for filmmakers, because you had $7 or $8 million to make a film that should have been much more...
Well, it looks a lot more.
It looks a lot more. No,
I mean, that's still a lot of money for most filmmakers to even get. I mean, first-timers are doing it in 20,000, or, you know.
But for example, you had a problem with brands, and I actually thought this was a conscious choice, that with all this inner turmoil that she has, and she's walking through this town with very generic brand signs on stores, mm-hmm. and in the supermarket they're very generic, except for the very nice little placement of Mrs. Rosemary.
There's actually it says, you know, it does say it, and this wasn't me, because I don't like these kind of in-house jokes, but actually it's Ma Ramsey's. But she spelled my name wrong, the designer, because we couldn't use fucking coat, we couldn't use Campbell's soup tin. We live in a world where we see these things, and I can't show them. So it was quite fun designing labels. It was like, I had to design pop art labels. But if you look closely, it's actually Ma Ramsey's spelt wrong. It's R-E-M-S-E-Y rather than S-A-Y. And when she showed me at first, I was kind of mad. I went, I don't know if I want to be this. But actually, Ma Ramsey sounds like a soup can, you know? So.
Well, it came off like Rosemary, like Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, no,
well,
that's cruel.
That's what I thought that it was.
No, it's Ma Ramsey's.
Ma Ramsey.
Like, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, and we were like, what the fuck? So, you know, there's a soup can, was a Scottish label called Granny Smith. Yeah, and I said, call it Granny something or Ma something, and she meant Ma Ramsey, so that's how that happens. You know, we were rather tired.
But what advice would you have for younger filmmakers who are working with limited budgets?
Yes, we will be saying it. Don't try and change things for other people. Don't try and be persuaded by producers and people to change your vision. If you stick to your vision and you're true to yourself, it kind of works. I mean, it's tough. It's a big Fitzcarraldo journey. But then you'll have your good karma at the end of the day. You'll have your good soul, you know. If you start to sell little bits of it, you become nothing and nobody, and you don't have any vision. Yeah.
And hopefully you don't have too many Klaus Kinski's.
Although I'd love to meet him. I've met a few like that in my time, I tell you. Samantha Morton's no far off. But in the most beautiful possible way, I love her very much, yeah. But she's Klaus Kinski, she's crazy.